On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we get hyped for the NFL schedule release. The Raiders don't have to travel to the moon and back this season, which is always good. We talk about the expectations for Casey Hayward, and now the defensive roster's pretty much set, we talk about what the biggest hole in the defense could be. We also discuss what the Packers signing Blake Bortles means for the AFC West. Soto gives the Raiders fans a giant tongue-lashing that I think they deserve. And we decide the best way for the Raiders to die. And I also give Soto a final push-up ultimatum. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm
into fucking nightmares.
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. I'm RJ Clifford. He's Juan Soto.
Yes, sir.
So Johnny Boy, I don't know if you've been counting, but it's been 25 days. 25 days that you have owed me 20 anytime push-ups because you whiffed on the Jake Paul, Ben Askren celebrity thriller YouTube boxing match. 25 days, you have been a welch and an embarrassment to this show.
I have offered you to do them. I said, okay, fine, I'll do them.
No. You had when you wait this long, you don't get to be like, okay, fine, like, I owe you a favor. When it's been this long, I need it on my terms. I need it done on air.
You're not going to be able to see them.
On YouTube, you will.
You still. My shit's fixed. It's not going to move.
What we're going to do. This will be the deciding factor. Juan, you're either the biggest piece of shit in the world.
Okay.
Or all is fair. When this show is over, you're going to film yourself doing all 20 push-ups, and I'll tack it on to the YouTube, and I'll mention it at the end.
No problem.
And even then, you're getting away with this because there's supposed to be 20 anytime push-ups where I can hit you up at work and be like, hey, dude, give me 4 push-ups. So you're like making out with a chick on a Friday night, and you have to say, all right, put your dick away. I need 7 push-ups. You're getting away scot-free. So if I get any complaining about this.
The push-ups on top of her.
Those count as double. The problem is once you get to like 7 or 8 push-ups, like you're going to bust and you're going to be done. So then you're going to be like, how do I do more?
Maybe when I was younger. Get that high. Right.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out if you are a true man of your word or not. It's been over 3.5 weeks, damn it. So a special that we're recording this on Wednesday night, and it is just a couple hours removed from the schedule release, right?
Ooh.
I get hyped for schedule releases. There's some people who like, yeah, like there's some people who like shit on it and they're like, oh, it's like such non-news. It's just the NFL, like, you know, owning the media time. Market. Yeah. Just like
owning the news, basically.
The news cycle, right? That's all it is. I love it. Like I look at the schedule and you get pieces of it, right? Like we know we were facing the NFC East. We knew we were facing the AFC North. We obviously knew about the 6 AFC West games. We found out not that long ago that the 17th game was going to be the Bears. So like you kind of know, but once you see a schedule, 18 weeks, 17 games, bye week, where are we going? When are we coming back? Where are the road trips? Is it before, after the bye week? Like I get jacked like thinking about it and going to that point.
Yeah. You know, and let's not fool ourselves here. When you play a team does matter.
Absolutely.
You know, if we would have played the Bucks last year, maybe a couple weeks sooner, it would have been a different story. They had not clicked yet. They weren't firing. The defense wasn't as good as it ended up being.
They limped into the playoffs. Like people forget, they kept their Super Bowl team together. They're going to be unbeatable. They were 9-7 last season
and just
clicked at the right time. Like everyone's like, oh, they're unbeatable. Tom Brady's a god. It's like the brake pedal's on the left, doggy.
So
the one thing I hate about schedule release day though. Is all of the media on Twitter being super coy and being like, I know what the schedule is, but I'm not going to say. Here's a hint. Like, motherfucker, just say what, release it if you know, and if not, shut up. You're trying to look like, I know, but I can't say. Like, you just look like a shill.
That's why I like dirty strip clubs, all right?
Yeah.
Because they go from, like, walking out to naked. like within a half a song.
Yep.
It's like, bam, there it is. I don't need to, I need you to tease me a nip and pull it back, or tease me a little butt crack and pull it. No, get out there, fucking shake your ass to sucking on my titties like
you wanted me, calling me all the time.
And just drop it and make it happen. That's it.
Or you got the strippers that dance to Marilyn Manson. You're like, all right, this chick is dead inside. I'm going to the VIP room with her.
Yeah, she's going to go. She'll do something for a couple bucks.
So here's the schedule. I'm not going to like name every single game, but I like it. Three primetime games. Thanksgiving game.
Well, four, right? Four of those. That technically.
Well, if you count Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving's at 1:30 Pacific time. So not technically a prime time, but
okay.
But that one. And then Chiefs on Sunday Night Football, week 10. That'll be great.
Ooh, yeah.
And then we got two of these, baby. Monday Night Football, week 4 at SoFi Stadium. With us here in LA. And then opening day at home, Allegiant Stadium, packed to the rafters, tailgating beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
Raider fans blitzed off their asses. September, so the weather's still good. Baltimore Ravens coming to town, and we pop the top off of Allegiant Stadium. First game with fans at home, prime time. Let's go! Let's go!
That's what we needed right there.
How you kick this shit off. I don't care if they went to the Super Bowl two seasons ago. I don't care if they're one of the best running games in football. Let's go. Nobody is going to beat the Raiders in their home opener with fans. Last year, we shocked the world and beat the Saints in our home opener in primetime. We're going to do it again in 2021.
I'm telling
you, man.
Mark
my words. This, you can't bet enough on this game.
This is how you, to steal a line from Nuke LaLoosh, this is how you announce your presence with authority.
Yeah.
All right? You go out there and you just drop your nuts out there, man. This is what's going to happen today. You're not going to go out here with a W. You're going to get out of here with your life, but barely. And that's what we have to do, man. I think it's a great test for this team. If this team can't get jacked for this game, on Monday night, everybody's going to be watching this game. Everyone's already played. All the games have already played. The rookies have all played. All those new people in new places, all those new faces in new places, they've all played. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to be watching this game. Okay, who the fuck is laughing now? Right? Oh, you guys picked that person, and you guys did this, and you guys are this, and you guys are that. Fuck that shit. We're going to go out there, and we're going to show you who the fuck we are. And we're going to find out.
I love it. I'm getting tingly. Down to my plums.
My plums. Blue
hue down to my plums. So a couple, we'll talk later about which games you think we're going to go to. Because like I said, for work, I'm in Vegas every other weekend.
All the time.
They've got some pretty cool like destination places. Like they're going to New York. They're going to other good spots. Actually, that's kind of it.
I'm not going up fucking Indianapolis.
I went. I went to the Thanksgiving game in 2013 when the Raiders went to Cowboys on Thanksgiving. I had a blast. We lost, but I had a great time tailgating. I was eating chili out of a red Solo cup, and just I learned how to travel and eat at the same time. Left hand, vodka soda. Right hand, chili in two different red Solo cups. Just boom, chili, boom, vodka, boom, chili, boom, vodka.
I mean, as much as I hate the Chiefs, Kansas City has some tremendous barbecue.
I had a great time.
I went there and I had – that was the Tim Brown return the punt game that I went to in like 98, something
like that.
They've
got a fun downtown. It's small. So like you're going to basically –
you can walk everywhere. You can walk everywhere.
Yeah, like you're going to do everything you want to do in a weekend, but we're going to be vacationing there for 3 weeks, right? Yeah, like we're not stationed there in a military base.
It's like Nashville. Like Nashville has that one strip.
A little more family-friendly version of Nashville.
Yeah, yeah. Nashville can still get a little funky, but no, yeah. When I went to Kansas City, it was a December game, just like it is here. Mm-hmm. And there was a barbecue spot. It was whitewashed, like all white, and it had a red door. And the same dude did everything. Mm-hmm. Cleaned the table, took your order, cooked your food, all that shit. And this shit was delicious.
The toilets.
Delicious. The same dude with three teeth in his mouth. Oh, it was delicious. So good.
So because we're on the West Coast, scheduling means so much more to us. Like if you're on the East Coast and you're playing like half your games, you're just like, oh, it's a 2-hour flight for like 60% of our games. Like when you're on the West Coast, that's why the Raiders always get fucked travel wise. Right. Mm-hmm. We travel the 8th most distance on the schedule in the NFL, which sounds bad, but
it's a lot better than it has been.
A lot better than it has been. This is one of the best travel schedules I can remember. Like I don't remember as a little, like I've been a Raider fan since I was 8, but I don't remember like as 11 years old, like going through like how far the Raiders were traveling. For as long as I've been like kind of keeping one eye on how far the Raiders traveled, this is the best schedule I can remember. All of the East Coast teams that we're playing come to us. Ravens, Dolphins.
Oh, no, we have to go to New York.
Eagles.
Okay.
Chiefs. Okay. We only go to 2 East Coast games. The Steelers in week 2 on a short week, and it's a 10 a.m. game. That's a rough one.
We got 4 of those.
Week 2 is a rough one. At Pittsburgh. At 10 a.m. on a short week after Monday Night Football game. The other East Coast game is Giants after a bye. So you can't ask for better than that, right? If you're going to have to travel East Coast, at least after a bye. So travel-wise, this is not one bad. Of the best ones I can remember.
So that Steeler game is going to be tough. Not only are you coming off of a huge high, you're super jacked, you're playing the Ravens, you're playing at home, you have your fans, opening day, Monday night, everyone's watching, short week, you travel to the Steelers, who do the one thing that we've been super terrible at defending, which is throw the fucking rock. They throw the rock almost, they even though they have a new running back, don't get it twisted, okay? They're going to throw the fucking ball, and they have some stud receivers. That's going to be a tough game, man.
And it's only week 2, so Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been in a walking boot for like 4 straight weeks. You know, like he hasn't had a chance to like get
his. He's still soberish. He's soberish. Yeah, the beginning of the year. He's not. He doesn't have that alcohol bloat yet.
Yeah, all his kind joints of like are still working.
Late October, he gets that bloat face because he's been hitting the fucking sauce.
So we play 6 playoff teams, but that includes Chicago and the Washington football team, which you know like. Barely limp-dicked their way into the playoffs, but it doesn't count Miami, who was 10-6 last year. That's going to be a tough game, which leads me to the early part of the schedule. Pretty brutal. Like we just mentioned, Ravens, Steelers, Dolphins at Chargers, who are a giant wild card on how good they're going to be this season.
Let's be honest here. That at Chargers is going to be a home game.
Yeah. Home game. Yeah. It's like our vacation home. SoFi Stadium. And that's another Monday night game. But then after that, it gets pretty easy. Bears, Broncos, Eagles, bye, Giants, Chiefs at home, Sunday night game, Bengals, Cowboys, Washington football team. So there's a big chunk in the middle of the schedule that's pretty easy. But then, again, like the whole season's bookended, it gets kind of rough. At Chiefs, at Browns, Broncos, Colts, Chargers. So
here are the games that I'm concerned about. Of course, the Chiefs, because they're the Chiefs right now, okay? So there's going to be the Ravens game. I'm more excited for that than concerned. I'm concerned about the Steelers game just because, like we talked about.
Our defense is actually semi-built, as bad as our defense is. Right? Our defense isn't good. But it's kind of built to beat a Ravens team.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we got some good defensive linemen who's good against the run.
We need to make sure we get that pressure up the middle.
Yeah.
We get that pressure up the middle and hopefully whoever's playing DN that game can push.
Yeah. There'll be a lot Lamar of Clay Jackson Farrell inside. And not a lot of like revenge game for Yannick Ngakoue. I don't think.
Yeah. You know? Not
Clay. And they're stopping the run.
So the Steelers, I'm concerned about that.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about the game before and after the at Chiefs game or the first Chiefs game, excuse me. Mm-hmm. The Giants and Bengals, they concern me for different reasons. Looking ahead, if it's the Giants, you're looking ahead to the Chiefs the following week.
Yeah.
And depending how we do against the Chiefs that first go around, it's that letdown game the following, which we have been known to have those letdown games. And the Bengals are definitely a team that we have a letdown against.
Right at when our letdowns start, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. Let's say we end up, you know, we're like 7-3 feeling ourselves. That is exactly when we fall apart like the last 2 seasons.
Well, here's the good thing. And we said that shit last year about Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
They were in the shitter and then we took a dump. But look, when we started to have a rough patch in our season the last few years, you have the Bengals, you have the Cowboys, you have Washington. Those three games, those teams are not lighting the world on fire.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You have suspect defenses. Washington has a decent defense, but who's going to be throwing the ball there?
Yeah.
Cowboys have an atrocious defense, and the Bengals are just the Bengals. So
their offensive line is going to get Joe Burrow killed by week 11.
Oh yeah. Let's just get him a fucking receiver. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least that stack of games isn't going to be, it's not a buzzsaw. Okay. And hopefully we can pull out of that little section there. At the Browns again, I mean, travel there 2 years in a row. The Colts
that was our biggest curb stomping last year. Browns held them to 6 points. That was our best. Our best performance.
Wentz at the, I'm not sold on that, but I mean, we'll see how it works out. You still got to go out there and play the games. I think that they have a pretty decent mix of tough games and not as tough games. If you consider past performance, and again, how much does that matter? You never know. There's always these teams that, you know, come from the shitter up to the penthouse, but and back the other way too. So I think it's pretty evenly distributed.
Another good part of this. So my biggest takeaways are love the primetime games. Love that we're playing the NFC East, and the travel is just not the kick in the dick like it has normally been. I mean, we only go on 1 2-game road trip. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. None of this like 6 weeks without a home game like we did, what's it, 2 seasons ago?
Yeah.
None of those like back-to-back-to-back weeks.
Those London games.
Dude, or like playing in Florida back-to-back weeks. Or like, do we just stay there? Like none of that. There's only one time when there's back-to-back road games, which is so 15. Huge.
And that Browns game, it may be a primetime game.
Yeah. It says December 18th or 19th. So
Saturday or Sunday, and it could be a prime Sunday because we don't know yet. We don't know what time it's going to be.
So we'll finally be able to go to our first home Las Vegas Raiders game, Soto. I can't wait. And I used to think like, okay, I'm not going to get kicked out of a Raider game, you know, because like, it's like when you're driving on the highway and you think you're speeding. As long as you're only going the second fastest guy on the freeway, you're not going to get pulled over, right? Yeah, if you're going 94 miles an hour,
red Camaro go next to you.
But there's some crazy dude going 103 next to you, you're fine. So that's how I felt at Raider games. I was like, oh, yeah, like I'm going to be a drunken asshole, but there's 37 other dudes yelling more profanities that I've never even heard of. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But we just found out this week that Wynn Hotels, which is one of the classier hotels on the Las Vegas Strip, is hosting a nightlife experience in the end zone. That's just a fancy
word
for saying
a nightlife
club.
Experience,
right? It's like a previously owned vehicle. No, that's a used car. Nightlife experience. No, that's a club. You having a club in the end zone at Allegiant Stadium. So everyone's going to see my dick and I'm going to be escorted out of this.
Didn't
place.
They already do this? Like, isn't this from a movie?
Sounds like
the replacements didn't they have like the strippers?
I know they had like strippers as cheerleaders.
Was it the Las Vegas
XFL team that strippers in the hot tub at the end zone?
Oh yeah, you know what? Look, I'm not opposed to it, but
opposed to it. It's gonna be the death of us. But it's exactly how I can you think of a better way to go? Can you think of like if you had to die and you're like, all right, let's say you're like 93 years old and you've got stage 4 pancreatic cancer and you're like, all right, so you got 3 weeks to live. You're like,
Jesus, man,
this is 60 years away. You'll be fine.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, how do we want to go? Well, I want to be at Raider Stadium. I want to be at a club surrounded by giant ass chicks doing so much alcohol and blow that my heart just explodes. Like that's on the short list of ways I'd want to
go. Way to go.
You know,
I'll be chilling in the hot tub with these chicks in the end zone. Like someone plug in a toaster and hand it over. It's been a good run. I'm taking my angels with
There's
me.
There's no virgins waiting for me up there, so I'm bringing them with me.
I have a story to tell.
I've come to hear.
RJ and I were in downtown Vegas a few years ago. This was after Anderson Silva broke his leg. fighting Chris Weidman. And we were in downtown Vegas, and we tried to get kicked out of the Fremont casino. We tried. They wouldn't kick us out. We were pouring drinks on each other's heads. We were taking pictures of the cards. We were taking selfies at the table. We were ordering the order was, okay, I want a scotch, a Corona, a shot of whiskey, and a shot of tequila. And it's like, we can't order more than one drink. Just get it. Okay. And the pit boss is like, well, I mean, yeah. So what they did was they walked up. She goes, okay, here's your shot. You have to drink it before I give you the rest, another one. Boom, we pound the shot. Here's your whiskey. Boom. Boom. Okay, here's your beer. Guzzle it. We follow the rules. We had one drink at a time. We must have done that three times. And then I was seeing the
future. Drink moderately, one at a time.
Yeah, one at a time. And they wouldn't kick us out.
Well, that's the beauty of going to kind of like people who don't know Vegas that well. Like Fremont's like North Vegas, not nice, like one of the older kind of rundown hotels.
It's a fine establishment.
So when you're gambling like $15 a hand,
you're king.
You're like Mark Cuban in there. Like they're going to kick you out. They're like, oh God, this guy's going to make our quarter. Like we got to keep him around. He's a high roller.
They almost kicked us out, and then I pulled out my player's card. I said, I don't know this about me, but
you know who the hell I am.
I put my player's card down, and the pit boss was like, this motherfucker spitting right here. This guy here needs another drink. And I poured it on RJ's head.
You got it. Yeah. And I wore it for the rest of the night. Like the dice were too hot. That's why you had to cool me down. So that's the schedule. Can't wait. I'm jacked. If you can't hear it in our voices,
excited, man. Excited.
This is awesome. It feels like, oh, it's 4 months away. You're like, damn it. It's 4 months away. What can you do?
I don't know if I keep a boner that hard.
So one of the guys that are going to be picking off passes in that end zone next season, Casey Hayward, signed with the Raiders this week.
The worst kept secret in the NFL.
Yeah. So he's a 9-year veteran. He's on, you know, older legs, 31, I believe. Yeah. Started his first half of his career with the Packers and then played 4 years in San Diego, AKA LA Chargers, under Gus Bradley, our new defensive coordinator. So that's obviously why they brought him over. He's a guy that, that knows the system inside and out. Really smart player, played at Vanderbilt, right? Like smart guy.
Yeah. You gotta be smart to go to Vanderbilt.
Like his production has decreased a little bit the last couple seasons. But again, like all these other guys are taking swings at, it's a 1-year deal with a $1.5 million base salary and a maximum $4 million with incentives. That's like, you know, it's low risk, right? We basically traded Jeff Heath for him. That was basically what we did.
Yeah. It's, if you want to talk about, you got a 2-time all pro, and the 2-time all pro was in the latter half of his career. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like he was a 2-time all pro his first couple of years. You know, within the first 4 years of his career, he was a 2-time all pro in 16 and 17. You're talking about an alpha presence in the secondary. This fits the bill. Casey Hayward fits the bill. He's not a scrub out there. He's not going to get, you know, torched left and right. He's going to be able to help the secondary, the young guys there, how to prepare, how to read the defense, how to study. How to translate that study onto the field. So he's a good pickup.
So that's exactly what Casey Hayward told SiriusXM's NFL radio this week, as we had to say.
How big a challenge, Casey, do you think it's going to be for your teammates to get caught up to speed? And what are some of the things that you can do to help them along?
I think, you know, I guess it depends on the position. It's not going to be super hard on the corners to learn it, but it's going to be hard on us. We got the hardest job. So, like I was, you know, I was talking to Mullins earlier, and he was like, "Hey, when are you coming to Vegas?" He wanted to talk to me and things like that. You know, he's learning it. He understands the defense, but it's always some tricks and trades of the defense where you won't have to overthink. And I think when I get there, I'm gonna be able to teach some of those guys those things. Like, look, you don't have to just listen to this word, listen to that, look at this and look at that, and I think that'll help some of the guys. So that's what it helped me, you know, for the last four years or so.
So I have two big takeaways from that interview. First one was how he's talking about how the system is simple, but it's a hard position. It's
the most expected of them.
Yes, there's a lot expected from the cornerbacks in Gus Bradley's system. It's simpler, certainly more simple than Paul Gunther's, and simpler than most other defensive coordinators. But it's difficult.
More so like, more exactly.
Yeah, like we're not doing calculus out there, but it's a hard job. So be prepared for it. And the other part is like you mentioned, hey, I'm here to help the younger guys. Like he knows his role. Gus Bradley, he's mentioned how much he like loves Gus Bradley. We do anything for him. So when Gus says, hey, I need you to watch, you know, use that Vanderbilt education of yours and teach these guys the ropes of the system. Great. Mm-hmm. But notice he said, yeah, Trayvon Mullen hit me up.
Yeah.
Trayvon Mullen's going to definitely be the starter on one side. Casey Hayward's going to be the starter on the other side of corner. Where's Damon Arnett?
Who's he hitting up?
He's the second year player. He should, if there's a single person on the Raiders roster that should have Casey Hayward on speed dial, it's Damon Arnett. But I think Damon Arnett's thinking, this is just speculation, he hasn't like tweeted anything, but Damon Arnett's probably thinking, fuck, I thought I had the starting corner job locked up. Me and Trayvon were all set. And then they bring in Casey Hayward, who's like the teacher's pet.
Well, when you give up 78% completion percentage against,
bingo,
you don't deserve to just walk in there with the starting job. And look, here's the deal, guys. You know, I love you guys posting and talking to us and interacting with us. And we try to interact as much as we can as well. Save it. Oh, he's a rookie. He's young. He's this, he's that. Okay. What job do you know of where you can be this bad and still expect to keep your job?
Head coach of the Raiders.
Well, besides that, Damon Arnett had 78% completion percentage against as a corner. That's abysmal. All right. Jonathan Abram was the worst defensive back in the league against the pass. Mm-hmm. I want to say that. I want to make sure everyone's clear about this. I don't want to hear anything about, oh, he's basically a rookie, or he was making the rookie mistakes and all this other bullshit. Look, that is the mentality of someone who's complacent and okay with being a loser. I'm not okay with losing, all right? If you're a Jonathan Abram and you're out there and you are the worst defensive back, okay, when you give up, when quarterbacks throw to you and that quarterback is going to have the highest quarterback rating against you, when it's the, and this is the entire league. It's not just like high flight starters. This is the entire league. When the entire league throws against you and that's the highest QBR against is against you, you should not feel safe. I don't care if it's basically your first year or you're making rookie mistakes. Save it. Winners get the job done. Okay, I need to get better. I'm going to get better. I'm tired of hearing all these fucking excuses. I'm not asking for these guys to be world beaters out here, but the worst in the league, 78% completion against? Come on, guys. We got to get better. No more excuses. I don't want to hear it.
Love the rant, Soto. I can't wait for Juan Soto Jr. to come home with a 7th place medal. Hear the tongue lashing.
He ain't coming home. What are you talking about?
Dinner's for winners, bitch.
He's out with the dog.
Shit together. And that's exactly where, like, what it should be at that point. Like, the Raiders have a, like, 97 defensive tackles and about 42 DBs, which is what they need because it's all young guys saying, hey, let's find a spot.
Competition. We'll see who the alphas are. Competition.
Yeah, we can figure it out.
No starters. Get out there, and whoever gets it, gets it.
Yep. So, again, another safe, like a Carl Joseph pickup, another safe, cheap veteran as DB. Worst case scenario, he doesn't become the same teacher we wanted, doesn't start. Best case scenario, he starts for half the season, plays great, makes Damon Arnett amazing. Damon Arnett starts the second half of the season and uses that knowledge for the rest of his career. And now we've got, bam, we've got two young starting corners in Arnett and Mullen that should anchor our deep, you know, anchor our backfield for the foreseeable future. So that's what we're hoping.
The thing is, guys, look, when I talk like this, it's not that I want these players to do poorly. I want the opposite. Yep. But the thing is I'm a Raiders fan. I'm not a Trayvon Mullen fan. I'm not a Damon Arnett fan. I'm not a Jonathan Abram fan.
Definitely not a Derek Carr fan.
Oh, stop. When they play for our team and they're out there, yes, I will cheer for them. But once they go, fuck them. I can give a shit. I want these guys to win. And if their play helps these guys win, cool.
You use the Trent Brown motto. It's the name on the front, not the name on the back.
Well, I guess the Raiders
are opposite.
Yeah.
Inverted, right? Trent Brown.
Yeah.
So with Casey Hayward signed to the Raiders, we've basically got our whole defensive roster set. Like, some guys will start here, some guys will start there, but basically the roster that we have is who's going to be our defense for the foreseeable future. So I was listening to Bill Barnwell's podcast, and they were going through every single team in the AFC West, him and his guest, I forgot who it was, and they were going through who has the biggest holes, right? Like, the draft is over, so who still has, like, the biggest holes left on their team? And when they got to the Raiders, they both said defense, but they didn't really pinpoint a position, a player, a what. So I'm asking myself, what are the biggest holes in our defense? And it's a really hard question to answer because it depends what you mean by hole. Mm-hmm. Every single slot, every position that we have on defense, there's either a first-round draft pick there or an expensive free agent. So once we drafted our new safety in Trevon Moehrig, we're like, okay, like, that was the hole, right? Like, there was a hole at right tackle, we got Leather. There was a hole at safety, we got one. And then we also drafted Carl Joseph, right? So where is the hole? The defense is still bad on paper, but it's hard to pick, like, the hole. Like Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue, good edge rushers. Eventually, we'll find out who our tackles are. Hankins, Jefferson, Irving, whoever it may be. Littleton, Gutowski, expensive. Morrow, good, like, solid, like, probably the most consistent player on our defense last year.
Diablo is going to be in that group as a linebacker. Right?
And you got Moehrig, Abram, and Arnett, first round draft picks. And then Casey Hayward, 9-year veteran, you know, 2-time all pro guy. So it's like, there's no one position where you're like, okay, I want to replace that guy with this guy, but the defense is still, it's not so different from last season that we can't expect it to be bad again. So I ask you this, Soto, like, this is such a quandary to solve. How do you fix this? Where are the holes in this defense?
I said this a few weeks ago when you asked me the last time. We don't know what we have yet because the leadership on the defense has been so bad. We don't know where the holes are. We don't know if the Cleveland Farrells, if the Arnetts, if the Abrams were just put in positions where they couldn't succeed. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later. But so it's like, if you have a level field that's a little bit higher and you have these potholes, you can know what to fill in, right? We don't have that. We don't know what we have that cream that rises to the top. We don't know what we have yet in order to know what holes to fill. And that's why it's difficult. What I would say, what we're lacking right now is playmakers on defense. And that's at any level.
Yeah.
Are they there and can they be brought out with this better coaching, with this new group of players? Yes, I believe that there is. I believe that there's playmaking ability out there. Corey Littleton has shown, even more than Ngakoue, has been shown to be more of a playmaker. He's out there. Hopefully things work out where, you know, this new regime on defense is going to help him kind of bring that out of him. Ngakoue is going to be solid. In the secondary, we'll have to see. Trayvon Mullen started off the year well last year and kind of dropped off. We'll see if he's able to be a little bit more consistent throughout the year. We'll see if Arnett's bulked up, dude. He's bulked up. So he's been putting in some work. Hopefully,
that's what Mayock wanted him to do. Yeah. A few months ago, he's like, they got to get stronger.
Put on some weight. And he's put on like 20 pounds. So that's good. Hopefully, he keeps his quickness. But yeah, man, we need these guys. I mean, it was Gruden who said at the end of the year, at the end of the season, we need our young players to start performing. And right now, there is not going to be an excuse of the coaching was bad, the system was hard, the system didn't fit. It's not going to be any of that stuff. Gunther's a teller. Telling is not teaching, right? We need to have an input. You have people who have been in a similar system, like like the Littletons. His system, that system that they ran in with the Rams is very similar to what the Chargers ran. And you know, you have Hayward there, and you have pieces there that's going to be able to help. No excuses anymore.
If there was any sort of mentality, any hint with these like rookies and second year players, like, oh, I'm the first rounder, you know, I'm Damon Arnett, I'm Jonathan Abram, this is my job. We got Carl Joseph that could take your spot away. We got Casey Hayward that could take your spot away. Like that mentality, if it's still there, you're not going to last long at all.
Nope. And this is what we need right now. We need, because what I was like, what I was talking about last week about when you draft poorly, it doesn't necessarily affect your starting lineup. It more affects your depth because you don't have those guys that are so much, they're so far above everyone else. Those are lockdown starters. What you're doing is you're moving everyone up a step. So you have these rotational starter backup guys who are pushed into those must start roles. And then you have these special teams guys who are the rotational starters and guys who maybe wouldn't have made your team who are special teams guys. So it's like everyone gets pushed up a notch. Now you have guys that are capable of taking your spot at different levels of the defense. So that's going to push. That's going to put – hopefully that pushes everyone to be better. And the competition makes that, you know, helps us compete more towards the end of the year because that was a big issue defense and we just didn't compete.
So when you ask the question, like, what are the biggest holes – I asked the question. What are the biggest holes of the defense? The Raiders did a great job –
Of depth
and making sure like, and not even just like making sure every position is challenged for, like I said, who's our defensive starting tackle?
Competition.
Who knows? There's a ton of guys. We've got four defensive ends that can start. We've got three corners that could start. We've got four safeties who could, like, you're not really sure we assume Jonathan Abrams is gonna be the starting strong safety, but if he's that bad, Joseph's in, you're gone.
In a second.
A giant hook, pull him out. Joseph's out there. So, other than, like you mentioned, the Raiders completely whiffed on getting giant playmakers on defense. That's not true. Yannick Ngakoue's playmaker. Mahlrig, I think, could be, you know.
Littleton has shown he can be a playmaker.
Littleton could, right. So that's not entirely fair, but we didn't get the earth-shattering playas that you wanted, Soto.
Playas.
But they did a great job of two things. One, getting rid of Gunther and bringing in Gus Bradley, right? So when you have a whole defense where there's not like you're not like one really good edge rusher away or one really good free safety away from being a top 10 defense. When you're not that, which the Raiders aren't, you need an overall sweeping change. That's what you do. You bring in a new defensive coordinator, change the culture, change the system, but you also make sure that every single position there's competition for it. So these guys are at each other's throats, trying to beat each other in practice every single day to be that number one guy. Cause like, how many guaranteed starting positions are there on this defense? Three? Like Littleton, Kwiatkowski?
I mean, Littleton, Ngakoue.
Only because of contracts. Only because their contracts are huge, right? Like that's it.
It's the difference between being a salaried salesperson and a commission-only salesperson.
Yeah.
That commission-only salesperson is always going to work harder. It's always going to push harder if they want to succeed because they know if they don't do what they need to do, they don't get paid, right? And if you have somebody behind you that's just as good and pushing hard, it's going to force your level to go up higher, or you're not going to be on the field, or you're not going to be on the team. It's as simple as that. You have to perform. It's time to go out there and perform. No more excuses. No more this and that. No more, oh, they're young and all this crap. No, because we've seen a lot of young players go into the NFL and thrive. So we need to do that with our guys too. Fuck this bullshit. I'm tired of this freaking crap. I'm tired of these excuses. Okay. That is a loser mentality, people. We cannot have that if we want to build and continue this commitment to excellence. You have to commit to the excellence, and the excellence starts here. It starts in your head. You have to expect it of yourself, right? And once you expect it, then you inspect what you expect. Now, let me see, make sure that everybody on my team, whether they're playing or not, whether they're on the active roster or not, are they doing what they need to do every single day? And if they're not, boom, out, bring someone else in. That's what we have to have.
So normally when Blake Bortles signs a contract, it's not news to us at all. But in this case, it kind of is. It was reported this week. Blake Bortles, that Blake Bortles, and the Jags, kind of bouncing around.
Blaine Bortles.
Has signed a one-year deal with the Packers of Green Bay, which could mean something huge, or it could mean nothing. Obviously, the Aaron Rodgers saga in Green Bay is still ongoing, and the idea that he could potentially be traded, sit out and do Jeopardy, stay there, that's all still kind of up in the air. And he named the Raiders and Broncos as two of the teams he'd want to go to. He also named the Niners. There's no chance he's going to go there with their quarterback situation. So it's
and lack of resources.
And lack of resources. Yeah, they can't afford them. The Broncos and Raiders. Raiders, I doubt it. But if he somewhere, if he does get traded, if he does leave Green Bay and play, it's almost for sure going to be the Broncos. Almost for sure going to be the Broncos. If giant, huge if he does leave Green Bay. Yeah. So what does this mean that they signed Blake Bortles? Does it mean they know something we don't? Aaron Rodgers is out the door. They're getting someone to, you know, to help bring up their young quarterback that they drafted that pissed off Aaron Rodgers so much. Does it mean that? Or does it simply mean that they only have two quarterbacks on their roster and they simply signed a veteran third? Which one is it to you, Soto?
The sensible side of me is
it doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. So what I'm looking at is, look, I'm going under the belief. I really do believe that Aaron Rodgers is dug in. He doesn't want to play there. It's not about the money. It's not about the contract. It's not about any of that shit. He gave you the chances. I'm done with it. I want to move on. Okay. I think that the Packers organization is an organization that will also dig in. So it's one of the two things. Either they're preparing themselves for life without Aaron Rodgers, whether it be because he retires or because they end up shipping him. So they want to get a quarterback in there who's a capable quarterback of starting NFL games if you need him, whether it be starting the season with him or as a backup should Jordan Love, you know, shit out or get hurt. That's what I'm thinking, is that it's one of those two. They're going to be dug in no matter what, whether it's replacing Rodgers because he has to retire, or you know, a couple weeks into the season they have to ship him out.
I look at it as like, look, your quarterback room can never be too good, right? Is Jordan Love? This leads me to believe a couple things. One, I don't think that they're doing this to send a message to Aaron Rodgers. Like they've made it abundant. Like they've sent their GM, their coach, part of ownership, front office, have all flown to Aaron Rodgers' home to be like, let's
they
chill
also
out.
Drafted a DB in the first round again
because they needed a DB. I mean, like, oof. It's a couple things. So it's like, I think they're not, I think that kind of goes to my point a little bit, Soto. I don't think they want, I think they're going to act like we're just going to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're going to keep drafting DBs. We're going to keep making our team better. We want you to stay, hence us sending someone at your doorstep like Mormons every 45 minutes, like, hey, come back. We want you back, but we're not going to change how we do business. We're still going to be like, you don't get to dictate how the Green Bay, they're an old fashioned or conservative organization, right? That this isn't the NBA with the Lakers where like LeBron James calls the shots and everyone just accepts it's how it is. Like, no, this is old school. We're the owners. You're the player. We make the decisions. You get in line and do what you're told, right? And I think you've got Aaron Rodgers seeing Tom Brady, like, picking where he goes, picking his tight end. Like, he's like, damn, like, I'm better than Tom Brady. How come I don't get this? I have one Super Bowl ring, and I'm better than Tom Brady. Why can't I get this stuff, right? So I don't see this as poking the bear of Aaron Rodgers. It's just simply the Packers saying, we love you, but we're just going to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, we want you here, but we're willing to move on if we have to. The world keeps on spinning. As good as you are, as amazing as a season as you had last year, Aaron Rodgers is not the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers will move on and play games with as after Aaron Rodgers is long gone. And that's the message they're trying to send. It's like, look, we want you here. We're willing to make a commitment to you to be here, but don't get it twisted. You're not the Green Bay Packers.
So long story short, what does this mean for the Raiders in the AFC West? Probably nothing.
Probably no idea. Yeah.
No, business as usual in Green Bay. Who knows?
The answer lies in between Aaron Rodgers' ears.
So before we get to what up, Winbags, I'm seeing on our rundown, because we're a very serious, very professional show.
Yes, sir.
A whole lot of stuff. What did you write down here? This is, looks like a lot of stuff looking back. So we've had a week to kind of digest the draft, right? Like, we did the draft. We did our show. We interviewed Carl Cochran, talked the X's and O's, talked your expectations, talked about value. And that was all kind of reactionary, right? We've had a week to digest it. You've crunched some numbers. You've bust out the calculator. You had the pencil in the ear. Mm-hmm. What have you come up with?
Well, the first thing is that not everyone is saying that Leatherwood was a super reach. So I read this on The Athletic. Mike Sando wrote this. He was speaking to Randy Mueller, who was a former GM in the NFL. He's saying that where the consensus of where Leatherwood was in the tackle rankings for the rookies was preposterous. He's watched his tape. He didn't bat an eye that the Raiders took him at 17, and he wouldn't have batted an eye if someone took him in the top 10. Wow. So this is a guy that knows what he's talking about, but he's also a former GM. He's not a current GM. So take that for what you will. There is a differing opinion on Alex Leatherwood, and as everything, it's going to pan out on the field, and we'll see. One of the things that What up Windbags, okay? Yep. There's one that
little teaser
talking about us being so negative. All right. Here's the thing that we need to understand here, guys. I was listening to talk radio on a station that will remain nameless. And there was a guy, and I paid attention because his name was also Juan, and he was from Southern California. He's an Eagles fan. And this guy was talking like, oh, we have a young Mike Vick at our quarterback. We drafted a killer receiver. We're going to win the NFC East by going away. None of these other teams are any good. We're going to be this. We're going to be that. We're going to go right to the Super Bowl. And I'm thinking to myself, the Eagles? We're talking about the Eagles, right?
These Eagles?
Yeah. So I never want to be that guy. I'm never going to be that guy. That just it made me laugh that this guy was just so up his ass. Mm-hmm. No, I'm never going to be that guy. Sorry, guys. If that's what you want, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be that guy. I'm looking at this from the perspective. This is why I think RJ and I were so hard on the draft as far as the reaches and this and that. So take a look at Gruden's 3 years after coming back to the Raiders compared to Del Rio's. And we've all had these numbers. Del Rio was 25 and 23. John Gruden's 19 and 29. Okay, not great. Now let's take a look a little bit further. Since John Gruden took someone else's team to the Super Bowl and won, he's in 64 and 80. Again, not great. In the 9 seasons since he's won the Super Bowl that he's been coaching, he's only had 3 winning seasons, only 2 playoff berths, and 0 playoff wins since he won the Super Bowl. So he has not won a playoff game since that Super Bowl win. That's our coach, guys. That's what needs to get better. And this is why I second guess a lot of these moves. All right. So
not that Gruden can't put together a winning team, right? Like, a lot of coaches
have firework. He's a firework, man. He's
a lot of coaches have lost, and then won. A lot of coaches have won, and then lost. Right. So this isn't prove that Gruden can't take us to the promised land. What it does say is we can't just trust in him. Like, oh, look at his record. We just got Gruden knows what to do. Gruden knows what's right. It's like the evidence kind of says the other thing.
He's a quarterback whisperer. Really? Is he really? Who has he developed?
One quarterback, Rich Gannon, in 21
years. I mean, he
was
already a vet. He just plugged him into a system. Look, and this is another reason why I look at the Raiders draft with such scrutiny. The Raiders secondary was by far their worst core on their defense. Okay,
which says a lot.
Says a lot. If you're a bad defense, and that's the worst part of your defense. Okay. John Gruden, since he's been back in the four drafts since that he's had, he's spent 9 picks in the last 4 drafts on the secondary. The average in the NFL has been 6. So he's spent more, and it's still a bad core. He spent 4 of those picks in the first 2 rounds in the last 4 years. The average in the NFL is 2. So he spent double the picks, and it's still a bad defense. It's still a bad core. 9 of those picks have all those picks have come in the first 4 rounds. The average in the NFL is 4.5 over the last 4 years. And that's Warren Sharp from Sharp Analytics. Guys, we need to put the onus on who needs to take it. And it's not always the bad coaching. It's not always, you know, it's part of it. But when you're constantly seen as a team that reaches for players that could have been taken later or maybe not as good, because you take a look at Cleveland Farrell. Cleveland Farrell, 6.5 sacks, 42 tackles in his career. 1 pick later, Devin White, 11.5 sacks, 231 tackles. A pick after that, Josh Allen, 13.5 sacks and like 60 tackles. And he only played half a year last year. It's like, come on, guys. We have to be good. We have to expect more as fans from every level of the Raiders organization, from ownership, from coaching, from the executives, down to the field coaches, down to the players. We have to expect more. This blind faith makes you sound like the Eagles fan. That, oh, we have a young Mike Vick at quarterback. We have all this. We have, oh, we're going to win this, go to the Super Bowl. It sounds awful when you just sit back and put another team in that position. You take Raiders away and put a different team in. It sounds awful, guys. It's like, kill me if you want on the boards. That's fine. I'm not going to change. I expect more from the team that I love. And that's that. Commitment to excellence means something to me, right? When RJ and I started this podcast, I had no media background whatsoever. And I've worked at becoming better at this. I wouldn't even call myself good right now, but I'm working on it. And I'm trying to be the best I can. And that's what I want from everyone in that Raiders organization. End rant. Drop mic. You asshole.
No, very well said. Who are the most spoiled piece of shit kids? The ones where the parents say, oh, they can do no wrong. They're perfect. Let them do what they want. Whatever they do, they just shit gold, right? Like, I got an 18-month-old daughter. Like, I as much as I want to, like, when she wants on the couch, just pick her up. Like, I know you can get up on your own. Like, you do it. Like, do something hard. Do something uncomfortable. Like, expand. When you're doing something wrong, do it right. Because in the long run, that's what's best for her, right? The easy thing to do is just say, like, oh, you're fine. I love you. Like, the easy thing to do as a Raider fan is just be like, sit back. Hey, they're going to be great. I love them too much. They'll be fine, right? Like, I trust in Gruden. I trust in Waller. I trust in Carr. I trust in Littleton. I trust in Abram. They're all going to be fine because they're all so great and they're all so wonderful because they're Raiders. Like, that's the easy thing to do. The hard thing to do is being like the tough love. And it's not, you know, is John Gruden listening to this show? Maybe not. Is Mike Mayock tuning in the Autumn Windbags every single week? Maybe not. How far can we go? But the mentality is the same. The mentality is the same. And it's like, demand more, even if it's hard. Even if that's the hard thing to do, demand more. And you guys always demand more from us, which is why we always do the What Up Windbags. And I know this very first One Up Windbag goes absolutely against everything that Soto just blew up about, because this one just powders our nuts. Like, you can tell when you do the What Up Windbags and put them in the rundown and not me, because you always get one of these. Mike Creamer.
I love that name.
I hope that's his real name. Great video. Love the debate and conversation. Best Raider comments available. Surpasses anything local television is producing. Keep it up. !!
I concur.
So even with your whole diatribe, Soto, if you got to tell people what they're doing wrong for them to improve, you make sure that we get our nuts buttered up into What Up Windbags every single week.
I got to tickle my own plums every now and then.
Mark Connor says, I agree with them about Abram. He'll have to learn to cover or get out. I haven't been high on him from the beginning. The way he was puffing his chest out to Gruden when we were on Hard Knocks that year, Abram's rookie year, that told me all I need to know. The dude is not that smart or mature. How fast things have changed for Jonathan Abram and our perception of him. At that time, we thought that was great. Everyone's like, this guy's got attitude. The guy's got swagger. He's an alpha presence, to take John Gruden's awesome slogan. The guy hits people. He's confident. He's talking to shit on Derek, like to Derek Carr when they're doing their team dinner. Like, yeah, I love the swagger. This guy's going to be awesome.
Salmon.
And then you see him being completely lost in coverage. And then it's like, oh, the guy's dumb. He's overconfident. He doesn't listen. I mean, like, you could literally be anything on planet Earth as long as your results take you where you want to go.
As long as you perform. And this is what we're talking about. We're talking about getting out there and performing. If I come out here and I'm not prepared and I'm just stumbling left and right, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I agree with you, and just mailing it in, you guys are going to fucking crush me, man. Yeah. Even you guys crush me anyway. But the thing is I expect it. I want that feedback. Well, guess what? I'm not going to tell somebody who's out there not performing. I'm not saying he's not working, but the performance isn't there. The results aren't there. And that's what needs to happen. The results need to be there. You're basically one of those commission-only salespeople. Mm-hmm. If they want to cut you, they cut you, and they don't owe you any money. Bye. Go. And he needs to perform if he wants to play.
Yeah, I mean, I still like his swagger. I still like his attitude. You know, like, I think
that's perform.
Good.
Just, you gotta just perform.
like you're a strong safety in the NFL. Like, you're not a golfer or a tennis player. Like, talk your shit, puff your chest out.
Yeah, it's fine, man. Perform. Yeah. And by all, if you're gonna talk all that shit, you can't be the absolute worst player in the league against the pass. Yeah. You can't. That's when you get the negative feedback.
Take me through this last one. Soto, VI8962. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the draft,
or VL, I think it's VL.
VL? Okay. Yeah. La 8962.
Cool.
Take me through this one, because there's a lot going on here.
So he said that draft value argument is invalid and pointless. First off, that's absolutely false. Okay. You need to know what players to pick in the position where you're going to select them. Just because you pick a future Hall of Famer in the first round that you could have gotten in, let's say, the fifth round, if you pick, but he would have been there.
Well, it matters what you're losing in that situation, right? Because that's what to me is not so much that, like, oh, that was a bad pick because he'd be there later. It's more of, who did we not get because we didn't wait to get this player? Like, look at the best teams in football. Like, the Patriots, they gather as many drafts as possible because they know it's a crapshoot. Everyone's like, oh, the Patriots draft so well. Bill Belichick's a genius. No, he just wraps it, like, just gathers up compensatory picks, gets rid, like, trades players away when he knows that they're done. He just used the shotgun approach, just en masse, get everyone you can. And then you've got the Rams who go opposite. They're like, hey, we're always going to be drafting really late in round one. Let's trade those first round picks for value, for other players, for positions of need. Like, two completely different ways of approaching the draft, but both ways understand what the value of those positions are, right? I keep hearing this argument. It's ridiculous. Oh, Alex Leatherwood in round one, Trayvon Morgan round two. If they would just switched, no one would have complained. Everyone would be fine. Yeah, bitch, we gave up a fourth round pick to trade up four spots to get Trayvon Morgan. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's literally the best example I can bring
another
up.
Starter.
We got both players, but we gave up a fourth round for it. So, like, that's I can't think of a better example of that. Just not understanding the value. So it's like, well, we got the players we want. Yeah, but it cost you another player that could have been a game changer. That's what I'm talking about.
So he goes on to write his examples, basically. There's no evidence that trading down to obtain more draft value actually produces a winning team. That's what he says. Okay. He's saying, okay, the Chiefs drafted Mahomes in 17. The rest of the draft class was garbage. Kelsey was a third rounder. Tyreek was a fifth rounder. Matthew was a third round pick acquired in free agency. Chris Jones, a second round pick. Those are pretty high picks still, okay?
What does he mean the rest of the draft class was garbage? And he's talking about Travis Kelce.
Okay, anyway.
Or just
okay, look, okay. This is what he's saying, okay? And then he went into talks about the Bucs. Brady was a sixth-round pick and got in free agency. Gronkowski was a second-round pick, came out of retirement. Evans was a first-round pick. Godwin was a third-round pick. Shaq Barrett was undrafted. Devin White, first-round pick. Sue was a first-round pick acquired in free agency. Okay, look, I don't know what you're trying to say with all that, but here's what I'm trying to say about young players making a difference and how you need to draft young players early in the draft to be those different makers on your team. So let's take a look. So he brought up Tampa Bay. Let's bring up the champs, right? Look at their last three drafts where the players have already played in the NFL. So not this last one, but the last 18, 19, and 20. The first round pick was Vita Vea, who's the starting defensive tackle. Okay, he got hurt this year, but he's starting defensive tackle. All right. The second round, they got Ronald Jones, who's a rotational starter. He starts most games, right? MJ Stewart at cornerback. He was waived, didn't make the team, but he, you know, he plays for the Browns. Okay. Carlton Davis, rotational starter, in second round. 2019, Devin White, all pro. Sean Bunting, corner. He had three interceptions in the playoffs last year. In 2020, first round pick, Tristan Wirfs, starter, all rookie team, offensive tackle. Antoine Winfield Jr., safety, starter, all rookie team. These are impact players that you got in the first and second round over the last few years on a championship level team. Now, are they Tom Brady? Did it put you over the edge? No, but they're impact players on that team. And that's what I'm talking about. That's what we're not getting with our first round, second.
Playing as rookies. Yeah. And again, the whole like, well, look at who, you know, Tyreek Hill, fifth rounder, Travis Kelce, third rounder. Yeah. That fourth round that we gave up could have been our next Travis Kelce, could have been our next Tyreek Hill, but we gave up the fourth rounder because he didn't understand draft value and had to trade up four spots. That's pointing to great players drafted mid rounds literally proves my point.
Accumulate as many as you can and use value. Yeah, for proving our point for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right.
And thank you for your feedback.
We appreciate it. Yeah. We started the What Up Windbags with our nuts getting buttered up, and we ended it with our nuts getting smashed. But I think that's how.
It's like extra for that.
Yeah. Until next time, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. I can confirm that Soto did, in fact, do his 20 anytime push-ups. You can go to our YouTube page or Instagram or Twitter and see for yourself. Thank you so much again for listening. While you're there, go ahead and subscribe, like, comment, follow us on social media, all the good stuff. Until next time, later.